3, 2, 1.
This is the No Normal Show, brought to you by BPD. This is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school and boring in the dust and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the bold, while delivering the future to healthcare's leading brands. I'm Stephanie Weirwill, EVP of Engagement here at BPD, and I am joined, as always, by Desiree Duncan, VP of Health Equity Inclusion, and also Chris Bevelo, Chief Transformation Officer. Hello, Des.
Hi. Great to be here.
Hi. I'm excited. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Stephanie. Hello, Des. Good to see you both on this beautiful Monday morning.
Is it spring yet?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, the Minnesotan says it's spring. That's a big deal.
It's definitely spring. Yeah.
Okay. It's definitely spring in Nashville. I walked outside for 2 minutes this morning and I baked. Both in the glory of the sun and the birds, and it was lovely. So I'm bringing a sunny attitude to this somewhat difficult topic we're going to talk about.
Of that.
So speaking of our topics, we have a couple quick headlines to get into. Number one, there's some new research that we've done around the future of this chief marketing officer. And so Chris will talk to us all about that. We're also going to talk about the potential TV ad ban that's happening in the pharma industry. And then our main topic today is all around how the major shifts in U.S. policy and potential economic wave coming at us will affect healthcare. Yikes. Not so sunny of a topic, but it's really important, extremely important. I know it's forefront of everyone's minds right now, so we're going to get into it. And we're going to get into it.
We should start off with the theme song from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It's always sunny in healthcare. It feels like these topics.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
That is one show I have not watched. I get a lot of hard times for not having watched that show.
Okay, I haven't either, Chris, so I'm with you. Des can teach us. Speaking of shows, quickly, we're going to first, before we get into this, we have to close the loop on The White Lotus because we didn't plan for this to be a White Lotus podcast season, but it kind of turned into one because all three of us were watching. And again, it was hot in the media and in pop culture. So White Lotus has ended and we've got to close the loop on that. So I'll toss it to you first, Des.
I don't know. I guess I enjoyed, but then also it was kind of like a lot of loose ends, a lot of conversation around it. But mostly what I've been excited about was that going back to terrestrial TV times where everybody's watching it at the same time, because like if you didn't watch it by Monday morning, it's going to be spoiled by all the memes and all the creations on the internet. But yeah, justice for our girl, Chloe.
I will never look at my smoothies the same way. You all know I'm drinking smoothies every time we talk. So there's that.
You will always wash out that cup.
Yes, exactly. I saw a meme. Speaking of memes, says there was one that was like, anyone who doesn't wash out a smoothie, cup before they use it should be punished.
Wow. I didn't know there were such smoothie rules.
Well, that's disgusting. To leave whatever gunk was in there before and just like start anew the next day with the same gunk. No, thank you.
Yes, but see, I've heard the actor challenged on this on one of the late night shows. They're like, why would you use stuff from the other day? And he's like, well, I didn't. The actor said, my motivation was, I thought my brother made a protein smoothie. And remember the brother had said the day before, nobody's going to make you a man. You have to make one yourself or something like that. And so he's like, all right, fine. I guess I'll just join the bro club. And he thought it was a protein. His brother had just made a protein smoothie. So he just made another protein smoothie. That makes sense, doesn't it? Other than the stuff inside probably would have been all crusted and dry. I don't know. That plot line, that was the only thing I was disappointed with. Like, this sounds macabre, but he should have died. Spoiler alert. Like, that's classic White Lotus. Classic White Lotus is an inadvertent death. If you haven't seen the first two seasons, I won't say who died, but they were inadvertent. You know, it was kind of like a a collection of unfortunate moments and journeys that led to an inadvertent death. And that's what that was, even though it was, you know, it was a little more complicated. So when he came back, I was like, well, why did they do that? That's weird. But I love White Lotus. Now we have to switch to Last of Us season 2, but I won't pull you guys into that if you're not watching it.
Oh, okay. We did notice one interesting brand. Well, there was a lot of brand partnerships around White Lotus. I saw Away had a whole series of White Lotus bags, but one that caught my eye, we talked about, was Coffee Mate. They launched a pina colada flavored creamer. Oops. did not knowing what the plot was going to be. It was kind of giving the Peloton moment from Sex and the City for me a little bit. But Chris, you said you actually had one of these.
We did buy some Coffee Mate Thai iced coffee White Lotus creamer. It was delicious.
Okay. Now that does sound delicious, Thai iced tea. But yeah, the pina colada, LOL.
Well, pina colada coffee creamer to start with is a bad idea. With that. Yeah, and then plot twist, not great.
You don't like coconut and pineapple flavor in your coffee, Chris?
I don't, but maybe others do, Des. To each their own.
So anecdotally, I guess it worked for their sales if you were out there buying the collaboration. So let's jump into our headlines. I guess that's the last we'll talk about White Lotus this whole year, huh? That's sad.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Okay, so Chris, I would love for you to share a little bit of what's coming with the upcoming white paper and research that BPD is producing, releasing very soon around the future of the chief marketing officer. So tell us, what is this and what should people be looking out for?
Yeah, so we've talked about this for some time. I've been on the podcast talking about it. We've done all kinds of stuff, which I'll recap quickly. But I guess it was the summer of 2023 when we first started talking about these new threats that we saw to the CMO role. We termed that Rome is burning. And since then, we've had multiple conversations. We've had panels at conferences. We had the Joe Public Retreat in December, which was themed around the future of the CMO. And we have talked to a few dozen CMOs and some CEOs about what that future looks like. And that is in the face of challenges such as AI. That is in the face of challenges such as, though we'll talk about today, how those challenges may change given the new world. But the idea that we have seen an historic combination of low supply of those who deliver care, at the same time we've seen historic highs for demand of care because of the baby boomers, leaving people with full hospitals and questions like, why do we need to market? We can't even help the people who are just walking in the door. And so we have pulled together a very comprehensive look at all of that. We have pulled all the research together, compiled all the research, kind of updated those challenges, because again, it was 2 years ago when we first started talking about them. So we update the challenges, and then we, more importantly, I think, talk about, you know, like we like to say, chaos is in a pit, chaos is a ladder. So while there are material challenges to the CMO role at health systems right now, there are also incredible opportunities that emerge from our conversations. And so we spend more time on what you should do as a CMO. And again, as we've said for the last couple of years, as the CMO goes, so goes marketing. So this isn't just about the CMO role. It is about marketing and its place in the health system organization and the value it brings. So we will have this paper ready for distribution. In fact, I believe we will have it ready this week. So we will post a link when we share out the podcast and allow people to download it. We would love to hear feedback when people get their hands on it and get through it, see what they think.
Awesome. I'm super excited about it. I've had a sneak peek and it is really thorough and really, really interesting. So sounds like look for that in the show notes so you can see where to get it and when to get it.
Yes, and we will cover it next week. We'll do a deep dive on it. So if you don't like to read, apparently Gen Z, or go back to the generational conversation, Gen Z doesn't read anything. Is that what I've told? Anyway, if you don't want to read the thing, we will cover the main points in next week's podcast. So stay tuned for that.
Awesome. I'm excited. All right. Next headline is that there is a proposed ban for the pharma industry on TV ads. So RFK Jr. has floated a potential ban, and we'll dig into all of what this means and specifically what do we mean by TV. But the U.S. is one of two countries that actually allow direct-to-consumer pharma advertising, so the U.S. and New Zealand. And in other countries like Canada, the U.K., Europe, et cetera, there is not TV ads allowed for pharma. And the reason is because they don't offer that same protection around the First Amendment. So, Chris, you noted this has actually been floated before. This is not new. So we'll talk a little bit about that and whether we think this will actually happen. Des, I would love to hear, what do you think about this? What have you been considering as you've seen this headline floating out there?
I mean, speaking of not new, we saw this, of course, with cigarettes. The ban started, I believe, you know, 60s, 70s, and what have you. And so, in a way, it feels very much in line with that. And, you know, as a consumer, as a person that's health conscious, I would almost say that it's definitely, you know, needed from a safety standpoint of just having folks just kind of come in not knowing anything, but just saying, hey, I saw this ad, like I want to get on this particular med. The flip side of that is my concern as a health consumer would be, okay, am I going to be getting pressed for these different ones? Is this kind of advertising going to be coming directly from my provider? You know, are they going to be more of the mouthpiece for this, more so than they may be now? And then what kind of position does that then put health systems in from that standpoint? But that's kind of where my mind goes, is from that consumer mindset of, yeah, I'm tired of seeing these, okay, it's going to give you this, but then it's going to take away all these different things, these ads. It's like very confusing. But I don't know. What's your take, Chris?
My favorite part of pharma ads are when they're like, do you have headaches? Try Guberville, the new medication from Guberville Pharmacies. Side effects include headaches. Like when the side effects are the same thing that you're taking it for, like that's like universal. I have two thoughts on this. One, yes, as long as I've been in this business, which is longer than I will share right now, this has been floated at various places, usually at the state level. So for example, being in Minnesota, our former governor, Tim Pawlenty, in 2006, floated the idea of banning in Minnesota, direct-to-consumer pharma advertising on TV. So, and I know that, we have followed it even before then and since then. And yeah, usually the courts strike it down if it ever gets to a legislative kind of thing, because it is a First Amendment issue. Now, what's interesting to Des's point is, well, why didn't that work for the cigarette companies? I think the difference is cigarettes were found to be harmful and addictive, and that gave people the right, or whoever did it, the government, to ban them, where you can't say that about pharmaceuticals. So of course, they can be. That's not what they're intended. So I don't know that it'll go anywhere, but these days, who knows? Who knows? Like, it's a whole new world with the courts and everything. The other thing I will say is, the reason why I think this is important for our audience is, if it does go, if RFK Jr. does have his way and the courts don't stop him, I would not be surprised if they turn their eyes to nonprofit healthcare. What's the difference, right? What's the difference? These are... but in both cases, they are just different sources of care. One's a pharmaceutical, one's a physical source of care. But the same arguments could hold. Obviously, again, it's a market-driven system, whether we like it or not. Health systems and pharmaceutical companies have to compete for patients. So I feel like all of that is trying to treat the symptom of a bigger issue, which is the system. If you don't like the system, that's one thing. But you can't blame either of these two, like it or not, for trying to do the thing they have to do to survive as organizations. So that's my thought.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree with you that it'll be a very small chance that this actually goes through, especially because, you know, I'm sure pharma's already making calls, but also the ad industry, right? So this is a $5.3 billion spend in 2024 alone on TV ads that pharma spent. So that would be a huge blow to TV's ad revenue. I would actually venture to say this would we would probably see even more, reduction in the ability for some of these TV networks to survive. But also, how do we even define what is TV? And I think that as these conversations happen, that definition will get narrower and narrower. So maybe, you know, broadcast TV would be off the table. But I think it would be very, very far to say, OK, no streaming, no YouTube, no social video, no digital video. And so if that happens, if there were something that goes through, it would probably be, in my opinion, pretty narrow of a definition. And we would just see more ad money fuel into the digital social streaming side of things, which I'm sure Meta would be very excited about. So I think, Chris, your point is really interesting, which is will the eyes shift to nonprofit health systems? And our friend Paul Keckley, author of the Keckley Report, has talked to us quite a bit about how this year he expects more eyes to be on nonprofit systems in terms of spending. So maybe that segues us into our main topic here. But any last thoughts on this headline before we go into our main topic?
Just keep an eye on it, I guess.
Yeah, we'll keep monitoring it. We'll see what happens. So we'll move to our main topic. And we've been covering policy pretty heavily this year on the No Normal Show because it's happening. And there's a lot of shifts happening in the policy world that's affecting healthcare. So we've touched on it a little bit over the course of the last few episodes, but we really want to dive deeply today. And also, just a quick reminder, BPD is also producing ongoing real-time content around healthcare policy changes. We call it Policy ICU, and you can sign up for Policy ICU. We'll drop that in the show notes as well. But it's something that, you know, is changing by the minute, so we want to really keep our eye on it. But in thinking about the big macro picture here, so there's a lot that is affecting the healthcare industry, and it's sort of a perfect storm or a non-perfect storm, if you will, in terms of how it affects healthcare. So first of all, we see a really, really big changes happening to federal funding. So we've talked in previous episodes about NIH cutting funding, and that's even hitting AMCs. We are seeing across the board where there's growing fear of funding loss. And so that is certainly tied to the larger picture, but it's also tied to this shift on DEI and health systems having to consider how do we talk about DEI or not talk about it in this world where you might see funding changes. Additionally, of course, tariffs is all anyone's talking about. You open any app and it's all about tariffs. And so that is affecting healthcare and will affect healthcare depending on how it shakes out. And then the really scary one is a potential economic downturn, which might be headed our way. That recession word is now starting to be more and more in the forefront. So all of this is coming together and creating that non-perfect storm. So we'll get into each of these. So let's just start with federal funding first. Chris, what's been on your mind as you've been thinking of how health systems need to, what they need to be watching and what can they do at this moment?
Yeah, so I've been talking to a lot of CMOs actually about this. And it's interesting because right now, even though we have heard about the NIH cuts, obviously that's been going on for a while. The word I'm getting is that it's not impacting operations yet. And that's understandable because it's, there's lawsuits that are fighting back. Some of this is executive orders, which aren't really laws. So, you know, there's one system that I talked to that said, like, look, we're not acting on anything that's not law, right? There's all kinds of stuff flying everywhere. And until we are forced to, we're not going to make any kind of changes or cuts or anything like that. All of that said, most of them are also doing some significant scenario planning because they have no idea where all this will go, particularly the AMCs, if we're talking about the NIH funding cuts. And they're looking at, in some cases, you know, seven-figure hits, maybe higher, to their revenue if they lose as much as being threatened. So we work with some of the most prestigious AMCs in the country, so it's understandable they have a huge source of funding from NIH were they to lose that. The other thing I'll just say real quickly, we don't have that in our list, but it's kind of like a side effect of this. One of the folks I talked to mentioned that, we should probably look this up to see how true it is. But as this NIH funding goes, so goes some of the smartest people in our country. right? So NHA funding is used by top scientists, top healthcare researchers to try to find everything from a cure to cancer to the next, you know, COVID vaccine, whatever it is. And she mentioned that Europe is recruiting hard. So in other words, if that funding goes, we're going to lose those people and it's going to be very hard to get them back. So that's just a little side effect of that. So right now, I think it's people are taking a little bit of a wait and see, but they're planning for some pretty big impacts.
Yeah. And just to put some numbers behind, you know, what you're saying of what health systems can expect. There was some news out of the state of Minnesota. There's another shout out to your home state, Chris. But the outlet of out of Minnesota said that these NIH cuts could actually affect systems like Mayo Clinic and the University of Minnesota at the tune of $50 to $60 million per year. So, you know, that's just one example, and that's just because of the major ripple effect of these cuts. So Des, as you've been looking at this from your vantage point, what's hitting with you? I know you're really close to some of the conversation, especially around some of the funding challenges specific to DEI and health equity.
Yeah, where some folks are kind of sitting and waiting and seeing until they absolutely have to do something, as Chris mentioned. Those that are focused on health equity, DEI, inclusion, and what have you, are having to do some preemptive work in order to just not bring any heat their way, essentially. And so a lot of that starts with language. You know, what terminology we're using, especially given a lot of the bans that have come through some of these executive orders. So as we're looking at terms that were, you know, use quite a bit with the health equity, diversity, what have you. Now you'll see more of a switch to neutral language, such as, you know, health access or healthcare for all. And in fact, we started to see remnants of that during the Super Bowl with some of those commercials that had huge inclusion focuses. They switched to more of a ... for all. And if you're looking at this from a talent or HR standpoint, you're looking at seeing more terminology around, you know, opportunity, workplace well-being, emphasis on culture, which obviously has been having quite a time these last year or two. But yeah, it's this situation of, you know, whether you are kind of putting your head in the sand, trying to stay under the radar, or maybe some organizations that are kind of keeping their flags in the sand of this is the work that we're still going to continue to do. But so much of this is about, like, how do we talk about it? And, like, did we talk too much about it? Did we bring too much attention to it? And does that actually lead to a focus on the action or just talking about it? So my prediction is more of seeing folks actually like, okay, we talked a lot about this, but like, what are we actually doing? And so maybe this gives an opportunity to enact the actual change that they're looking for. But that's just where my
head is. A really tough one. Yeah, it's. I just want to acknowledge, you know, our marketing and communication friends. It's so stressful. This is so stressful. This is so difficult. This is so challenging. And, you know, Chris, to your point, you know, some organizations are saying we're not going to change, and others are saying, hey, we have to be proactive. And that's a strategic decision that's coming from the top. And so marketers and communicators are the ones that are having to think about the language. Des, as you noted, marketers are the ones that are having to say, okay, what language do we use? And we need to go, you know, check out where we're using it and how. And in some cases, they're getting that directive top down. And in others, they actually have the ability to maybe make some of those strategic decisions. So I just wanted to acknowledge this is really, really, really tough. And many of our friends out there are deeply, deeply, you know, struggling with it.
Yeah, it's felt like several steps back. It's felt a bit defeating. But it's like, how do you, you know, keep going in this work that you have dedicated your life to? You know, how do you find that kind of glimmer of hope? And it's like anywhere you can is the goal.
Yeah. So one last point in the overall topic of federal funding is that we're also seeing possible Medicaid cuts. And that's going to have a major, major impact because cuts on Medicaid will, of course, impact the ability to get paid for services, and we'll circle back to that in a little bit around how that may also affect the affordability of care and what people are actually able to access. But Chris, do you want to tell us a little bit more about what you see in this area?
Yeah, just real quickly, like, you know, right now it's kind of like a political hot potato because you see the bill that passed the House calling for significant cuts to the area where Medicaid is actually funded. It doesn't say Medicaid cuts, but the amount of cuts, interestingly, is almost exactly the amount of Medicaid funding. And so they're going to have to cut that from something. And when you do the breakdown, there's almost no way it's not going to impact Medicaid to one degree or another. If there's Medicaid funding, that means there's cuts. That means there's people without Medicaid, but they still need care. And if it's emergent care, hospitals have to treat them, and ethically you should help people even if it's not emergent. So, those folks are in Medicaid because they don't have a lot of money. And so they're not going to all of a sudden be able to just pay out of their own pocket. So usually that means that's a write-off for hospitals and health systems who have to deliver that care. Medicaid is not funded at an appropriate level to start with in many cases. So it's just to your point, going to add more financial stress, but we'll talk about the, how that could actually be kind of like exponentially worse, as we get down to these, to the final potential impact of what's going on right now.
Yes. Yes. So just to put some numbers around that, as of a couple of days ago, the Kaiser Family Foundation estimates $880 billion in Medicaid cuts. So that's some pretty significant stuff. And again, you know, all of these things, I think, map together in a way. There's a little bit of a gray area. So let's move to our next key subtopic here, which is becoming a four-letter word. It's not a four-letter word, but it should be, and that's tariffs. So, of course, everyone's talking about tariffs and the implications to businesses, to every single industry, and the constantly changing amount. I was trying to find this morning, what is the current, as of this morning, percent of tariffs across industries? And it's just changing by the hour. So I didn't even try to pull it in. But, you know, this will really affect healthcare, specifically because health systems, especially, but healthcare organizations of all kind are certainly their supply chains are global, and everything from needles to syringes to gloves to whatever it is, come from other countries, especially China. And so this will drive up costs for healthcare organizations and put an even more strain on the financial situation. So, Chris, what are you seeing around tariffs? What are you looking at regarding healthcare spending?
I am no tariff expert. All I know is what you've said, which is it's all over the place. Even over this past weekend, you know, there were different messages coming out of the administration in terms of like some carve out. So a lot of people said like, look, the iPhone's going to be $3,500 if these tariffs stick. So they apparently officially released carve outs for smartphones and laptops. And then I can't remember if he's the Secretary of Commerce, Lutnick, came out and said, well, those are temporary. And so I was like, oh, well, what do you mean they're temporary? And then President Trump came out over the weekend and said, there's no carve outs. It's like, what? Like, that's just the carve out. And that's what's happening writ large with these. Even with the pause, quote unquote, that happened last week, you still had 10% universal tariffs for everybody in the entire world and all of China's tariffs, which are now at, is it 143% or 135? I can't remember how much it is. So it's just very, very difficult to know what's going to happen. That's all I got on that. But yeah, if they stick at anywhere close to where they're at, it's not going to be great for healthcare systems cost-wise. That's fair.
And I think that from a marketer's standpoint, I would predict this may impact budgets, right? If overall expenses are increasing and supplies are a major amount of overall expenses, which is often not seen from the patient vantage point, but if expenses are increasing, then certainly if marketing is also seen as an expense, then how will that affect marketing's budget? So that's something to keep an eye on. Okay. And the last leg of our perfect storm here is the biggest one, which is what happens if and when there is a potential economic downturn. So We don't know that yet, right? Like I said, the word recession is being used more and more, and it depends on what happens in the coming days and weeks around the overall policy landscape. But Chris, I thought you had a really interesting take on this around maybe that the changes that healthcare has been seeing as an industry in terms of its relation to the economy. Do you want to share some of that take?
Yeah. So it's interesting. Right before we got on this podcast, I was just looking at CNN, and one of the top headlines says, top economist predicts recession in weeks if the tariff war isn't settled. So, Jamie Dimon keeps increasing his, I think the last one last week, he said there's a 50% chance that we'll go into recession, right? So just real quickly, those of us who have been around long enough remember when healthcare was not impacted by economic downturns. It was in the economist language, it was what was called inelastic. So if we have a recession, if we have inflation, if we have all these things, healthcare, just the demand for healthcare, that is, pretty much stayed steady. The 2008 recession was where that really changed, and for two reasons. The lesser reason, interestingly, was how big the Great Recession was, right? It's called the Great Recession because it was the worst financial situation since the Great Depression. So it was number two on the list in the last 100 years. But the real change at that time, and remember this is 2008, 2009, was that healthcare had changed. And essentially, people had way more money at stake in terms of what they had to spend to receive healthcare than they had before. And so healthcare for the first time became what's called elastic, meaning as the economy goes, so healthcare can go in terms of demand. And so that's really, again, consumer-driven healthcare is the reason for that, right? So that was in 2009. Now, where are we at today, right? So if that was an issue then, where has healthcare gone today? So a couple statistics for you. Kaiser Family Foundation reports that the premium, the health insurance premium for somebody who gets health insurance from their employer for a family was roughly $25,000 a year last year. Now that is that's the total cost. So employers and employees share that, right? So you're not paying all of that typically if you're an employee, but you're paying quite a bit of it. Healthcare spending per person in 2023 for Kaiser Family Foundation, $14,575 a year. So that's everything that you're spending on, right? What does that include? That includes your health insurance premiums. That includes your deductibles, your copays, your insurance, which is called out-of-pocket insurance costs. It includes, though it's not calculated in there, remember you're still paying taxes to support Medicare, Medicaid, VA care, and you're paying for anything that's over the counter, anything that's not covered by insurance, right? So not including taxes, you're paying roughly $15,000 a year. That was 2023. It's probably higher than that now. So what happens with that amount of expenditure? If you're spending $15,000 on average, right? Consider, this is statistics I just pulled, 42% of Americans have no emergency fund at all, none. They have no savings. 60% of Americans roughly only have enough savings to cover $1,000 and nothing more. So if your deductible is $2,000 and you have a car accident, you have a broken leg, you have a heart attack, whatever it is, and you need to blow through that $2,000 plus coinsurance, which can also be 20% on a hospital bill, 60% of people don't have that money. So what does that mean? Well, it's one reason why medical debt is a leading cause of bankruptcy in the U.S. But how it impacts healthcare is people delay care, right? They just don't go as often as they should, or they skip their appointments or their therapies. Pharmaceutically, they cut pills in half. They skip pills. They just don't refill, and they avoid non-essential care or elective care. And there's a lot of that drives the top line for health systems. So if the economy goes down, which right now looks like a safe bet, given the chaos that we're in, that's yet another thing on top of the tariffs we've talked about and on top of the federal funding that we've talked about that's going to potentially hit health systems. And one other thing too, by the way, we don't need to get into detail, but a lot of health systems, most health systems have two primary revenue streams most consumers don't know about. That's philanthropy, which obviously goes down in an economic downturn, and their investment income, which right now I think the stock market's going back up, but it's going to go back down. It's just like if the stock market stays down for the year, that's less money for health systems too. So the non-perfect storm, Stephanie and Des.
Oof, I'm feeling the pressure. I told you all I was going to bring all my emotional support beverages to this chat, and I do. I have my coffee and my smoothie and my water and my tea, but oh man. I think we're starting to see how all of this fits together, right? And the major pressure this is going to put collectively, not just any one of these topics, but all of them together on health systems, on healthcare organizations, and also more importantly on consumers. I think, Chris, as you were talking about that and just the affordability crisis coming to a head here, over the weekend, I watched the first episode of the latest Black Mirror season, and it was all about healthcare and cost. And I don't recommend watching it. I actually had like a complete emotional breakdown afterwards. But if you really, really, really want to empathize with, you know, those kinds of examples that you just shared, Chris, this episode was exactly, it was this imagine a world where healthcare becomes subscription fee, and then they just keep raising your fee, essentially, on your body. So, you know, Black Mirror is already ahead of the game here in their way that they would. But this is really, really challenging. And it's an access issue. It's a population health issue. It's an economic issue and all of the above.
Well, Des, I want Des to jump in. I don't know if you saw Black Mirror too. What I would say, Stephanie, is I saw that episode. And while it's about a specific thing, it really is kind of a depiction of healthcare overall, right? Where healthcare is becoming less and less attainable financially to people, which is causing them to have to do things that are not in the best interest of their health. The show is about a specific kind of technology and a little bit futuristic, but you could apply the lesson from it to healthcare overall and everything I just said. Des, did you see Black Mirror? Are you a Black Mirror fan?
I am a fan, but I have not caught up with this new season because of exactly the reasons Stephanie just laid out. I'm like, I don't need that more drama. But I mean, there's just so much pressure on the consumer on all the fronts. And so here's the next level of that. I mean, with real estate, there's like the real estate bubble. Will there be a healthcare bubble? Like, what is going to be the solve here, the relief here? This is a little bit off the wall, but I think back to the auto industry and bailouts in that particular way. So, I mean, revolution, you know, will the consumers, will the people start to stand? I guess that's where my mind goes about like, you can't keep squeezing people that have nothing. The juice is depleted. There's nothing left in this orange. So what's the game plan? What's the end game here?
We talked about that in Joe Public 2030. And I think the takeaway, unfortunately, was it requires a moonshot, whatever you mean by that. That could be socialized medicine. That could be Medicare for all. Who knows what the solution is? But if there was no appetite for that when we wrote that book in 2022, what's the appetite now for that? I think I don't need to answer that. By the way, I saw a critic who called Black Mirror cynicism porn, which I thought was
real.
Perfect. Right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I can't handle it. It's too much for me. I stopped watching it for several years, and then I watched this episode, and I was like, oh, this is why I don't watch the show. I can't. It's too much. Oh, but it's so real. That's why I think it hits so hard. Okay, so maybe we'll just wrap with a quick little shout out. We follow Paul Keckley. I mentioned him before. He was a speaker at the Joe Public Retreat in December in Charleston that we hosted. And he's a really great source for all of these issues. If you enjoyed this conversation, certainly sign up for Policy ICU, which we are covering these issues on a regular basis. But also Paul Keckley is a really great source. And I just wanted to quote him because I think he called some of this back in December before anybody really had an eye on it like this. And I love his quote. He said, economic factors outside our control affect us more than those within our control. So he was sort of giving this big macroeconomic picture. You know, often in healthcare, we think about our own organizations. We think about our competitors. We certainly think about policy in our own states, you know, cultural issues, all of that. But his point was economic factors, even like housing, affect healthcare. And he also predicted, as I noted earlier, that there will be more target aimed at nonprofit health systems. So we haven't yet seen that, but we could expect that moving forward. So he's a great source. And check out the Keckley report for more information. Okay, any last notes, Des or Chris, before I wrap this sunny episode?
We're going to have to pick the TV show to talk. I don't know. Apparently it's not Black Mirror. I don't know if it's Last of Us 2. Maybe it's The Studio, but we'll have to find something else. We don't have to do this every time, but there's so many good. Andor 2 is coming out. It's unbelievable. It's nonstop.
This is where our what we like kind of diverges. Like White Lotus.
You don't like
is,
Star Wars?
I don't know. I don't do the speculative fiction. I'm sorry. I can't suspend belief enough to do any of that.
Okay.
No Harry Potter for Des.
No.
That is a fun fact I will always remember about you, Des.
That I don't like Harry Potter.
Speculative fiction. You're the one that introduced me to that phrase, and now I think about it when I see speculative fiction. I think of you.
That is funny, because I guess I felt like that was redundant when you first said it, but now I see what you're saying.
It covers all of it.
Okay, that's our goal. Before the end of 2025, we have to get Des into and excited about some kind of speculative fiction. Well, book, a movie, a TV show. We'll get you there, Des. We'll find something.
Technically, Black Mirror is that. So,
yeah.
Yes.
I'll do that. That's all right.
Yeah, totally.
Solved.
Okay.
Goal
oh,
check.
No. Okay.
Yeah. People should send in their recommendations. Send us your recommendations if there's something you think Des should be reading or watching that's speculative fiction. And maybe
that's
we'll
a fun
all
challenge.
Watch it.
Help.
Yeah, okay. I love that. All right. So if you're listening, send us the challenge. Subscribe to the newsletter, The No Normal Rewind, that recaps all of these discussions and more. We'll pop several things in the show notes, including the link to Policy ICU as a reminder. And then also keep your eye out for the research paper, The Future of the CMO, which will be available early to all subscribers. And you can sign up at that link in our show notes or even subscribe to it via BPD's LinkedIn. The email address, as always, that you can shoot us a note to or send in that speculative fiction example is nonormal@bpdhealthcare.com. So with that, everybody, keep your emotional support beverages near in these times and push that no normal. And we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
3, 2, 1.
Here we go.